something called, you're familiar with the phrase identity politics? Yeah, you're familiar with this phrase. Okay, you listen to Ben Shapiro. So, in a world where people like to play identity politics, people take everything as black and white, right? You're on this side, you're on that side. Yeah? The Nazir is a confusing character because he's neither black nor white, he's neither right nor left, he's neither up nor down, right? He doesn't really seem to fit in an easy category. You know, we always like to put people. You know, he's like. What Lot is in Sefer Bereishis, you know, the Nazir is in Sefer Bamidbar, right? What's Lot? A tzaddik, a rasha, you know, the guy that hangs in life, would rather go to Sodom than be with Avram Avinu, or the guy that risks his life for Achnas Zorchim. I don't know, you know, it's so confusing. The Nazir is somewhat of a confusing character. The Torah explicitly praises a Nazir for his holiness, and yet Chazal criticize him for his self-deprivation. How can he do this? He's robbing himself of hana'os that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has permitted. So the decision to become Nazir also seems like a bit of a strange decision for a person to make. Certainly Bizmaneinu, it's an absurdly strange decision for someone to make, and that's why you don't have too many people or well-balanced normal people that take on a Nazirus. Every once in a while, every few generations, there may be a tzaddik that becomes a Nazir. Rav Kook had a Talmud who was a Nazir, you know, known as the Nazir, right, who was a special tzaddik. But very, very rare that you'd have a person that would take on such a decision. So how would a person know, even when the trade-off is worth it, right, that they know that there is a trade-off, that you're giving up certain things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is matir, and that Chazal are going to take you to task for it. That Chazal are going to say that you are the person, of Bavim Chazal say, that you're faulted and criticized for depriving yourself of Hana'os Olam Hazeh. But yet, you're striving for this extra level of Kedusha. How does one go about making that decision? How could a person ever have the confidence to know that he's choosing the correct path to become a Nazir, and that he's not just like a sanctimonious Balgaiva who's just, you know, trying to be different than everybody else? Normally the rule is that when you are sticking out and different than anybody else, normally that's a good way to measure that you're not doing the correct thing. Rabbi Balsam told me last night at the DRS graduation that he was chazering over some of Moshe Feinstein's tshuvas on sherry cask whiskey. Right, so Rav Moshe writes that a Bal Nefesh should be Machmir. You know, Rav Moshe was famously Mekel on this. He has one tshuva after another. It's Rabbi Teitz, Zichron Lebracha. Rabbi Teitz would keep on saying, no, but you have to be Machmir. And here Rav Moshe would say, no, but I'm Mekel. But you got to be Machmir for this reason. No, sorry, still not going to be Machmir. It went back and forth a few times. And Rav Moshe writes in one of those tshuvas, Rabbi Balsam told me, I don't remember this line from the tshuva, I have to look it up, that a Bal Nefesh should be Machmir, and therefore, Kshani Latzmi, I'm Machmir. But, you know, if someone's offering me a l'chaim and there's a chevra, you know, drinking, I don't want to stick out. I don't want to be different than the rest of the chevra. So then I'll have some. Then it's not kedai to be machmir, which is just like astonishing that someone of Moshe's caliber would ever believe that he could be part of the chevra. You know, like he would ever believe that he's not. You know, that he's not completely already different than everybody else around him. But that was his assumption, that if you're gonna that it's not kedai to be the Bal Nefesh Yachmir if that's gonna set you apart from everybody else. So how does a Nazir know that he's not just being this ridiculous Bal Gaiva? Second of all, when you look at the other most famous thing in this week's parasha, we have Nazir, what else?
Sota,
what else? One more that's very famous in this week's parasha. Okay, but yeah, that's the whole parasha. Birchus Kohanim, right? Birchus Kohanim is very probably the most famous psukim in the parasha, the psukim of Birchus Kohanim. When you look at those three psukim of Birchus Kohanim, right, these are supposed to be the bracha. These are when the Jewish people are going to be blessed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the vehicle of the Kohanim, and that is the way it works, right? We pass on the halacha. It's not the Kohanim who are blessing us, it's the Ribbono Shel Olam who's blessing us. That's why a Kohen who's an Avarian, who's a Megala Arayos, and who's does terrible Averos, doesn't matter. He can still do Birchus Kohanim because he is just the conduit for Hashem's bracha. It's not his bracha. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu blesses Klal Yisrael for all times, every single day, right, at least in Eretz Yisrael, and really we don't have a great explanation as to why it's not every single day in Chutz La'aretz, these brachos are it. This is how Hashem chooses to bless us. So let's look at the content. What exactly is the blessing? So there are three blessings. Yivrecha Hashem v'yishmerecha. What does that mean? V'yishmerecha, Hashem should protect us. Oh, that's very important for the Jewish people. If you know even a tiny drop about Jewish history, you know how important security is, that we need a Kodesh Baruch Hu watching over us. That's something that's very, very important. Let's skip to the last one. Yisa Hashem panav elecha v'yasem lecha shalom. Yeah, shalom is very important. People can only be productive in any aspect of life, spiritual productivity, material productivity, if you live in peace. That in kli machzik bracha, like shalom, the only kli that can hold bracha, that that can contain any other brachas in our life, is if we have shalom. That is absolutely critical. What about that middle one? Ya'er Hashem panav elecha vichu neka. What's vichu neka? That Hashem should give us chayim. Why is that so important? How would you even translate the word chayim? You know, there are certain words that don't translate perfectly well from Hebrew into English. Certain words that don't—they're just not perfectly translatable. I was just reading in one of the Hespedim from Aaron Lichtenstein, Zichron Levracha. They published a book of Hespedim in English. Rabbi Moshe Targum gave me a copy of the book. Very, very interesting. Very enjoyable to read. I mean, Chaval al Da'avdim. It's also very sad that we don't have him anymore. But one of the Hespedim, I don't remember whose, they were saying maybe Rabbi Carmi's. He was talking about how the word Zerizos doesn't really translate well. That the word, you know, it's very difficult to translate some words from Hebrew into English. Vichu neka, what is the goal of chayin? Why is it so important? Rav Seir Weinreb Shlita translates chayin as charisma. Charisma. But there's a problem with that. Because if you're going to translate chayin as charisma, why in the world is that so important? In what area is charisma important? What area of life is it important to have charisma? What profession that you go into is it going to be so critical that you have charisma? When, you know, I always thought when I was younger, when I was about your age and younger, I always thought that to go into chinuch, you have to have tremendous charisma because you have to capture people's attention and you have to, you know, my 10-year-old daughter told us on Sunday night, as we were reading Sudas Yantif, she said, you know, when I grow up, I'm going to be an excellent speaker. I'm like, oh, okay. So she plans on being in an arena where a woman's allowed to speak. That's good. So she said, I mean, you know, she's in tech, you know, it's not possible. Right? So she said, when I grow up, I'm going to be an excellent speaker. So I said, I'm being recorded. Yeah. So I said, really? How do you know? She said, because I pay attention when people speak and I see what works and what doesn't work. That's pretty good for a 10-year-old. So I said, oh, well, I sometimes speak publicly, so maybe you can like give me a hint, like what works and what doesn't work. So she said, when you just like start and just talk about stuff, no one's listening. But if you start with a story, then you really get people to pay attention, then you could tell them a lot of stuff. But first you have to start with a story. So I'm like, that is a great tip. In fact, I'm going to use this conversation as in a speech sometime in here, you know. Nedaraila Hashem HaShalem. So what was I saying? Oh, yeah. Yeah, charisma. So is it so important to have charisma? I always thought it was, that in order to be successful as a mashpia, you know, as a mechanech, as a rav, or whatever, that you need to be so charismatic. I later found that if you look around, it's not the most charismatic people who are the most successful, necessarily. Sometimes the most charismatic people have the most precipitous falls because their charisma got to their heads and they started becoming balei gaiva. People started to resent them for that. They started taking liberties because of their gaiva that they shouldn't take. They started behaving in ways that are unbecoming. Like, these are things that happen to people with great charisma. I find that the people who are most successful are the people who are the most caring, the people who have the most love for the Jewish people and for their Talmidim and for their friends and for Klal Yisrael. I don't know. So chayim is so important. Why is charisma so important? And Rav Tzvi Hirsch Weinreb points out, he says that he remembers when he was younger, there were two friends that he had who were the most charismatic people he knew. Right, so he became Rav Tzvi Hirsch Weinreb. What happened to his two really super charismatic friends? So he writes, one struggled with alcoholism all of his adult life, constantly frustrated because he felt he was not living up to his potential and died the premature death of a derelict on a New York City skid row. The other settled into a mediocre bureaucratic career, neurotically fearful to use his very real talents, lest he be outdone by others. So why again is this a bracha? V'chuneka? Why do we need chayin so badly? The top three things we need Hashem to give us. Shalom, I got, and I got v'yishmerecha, security. But why in the world is it so important that we have charisma, that we have chayin? So I think there's one yisod that helps us understand all of this. We celebrate Mesiras Nefesh in Yiddishkeit. We really honor people who have great Mesiras Nefesh, but there's an important point that can easily be overlooked when it comes to Mesiras Nefesh. We value Mesiras Nefesh only when it is for something important. It's never the goal. Meaning, just giving up yourself or giving up your life is never inherently valuable. Mesiras Nefesh, by definition, is only valuable when it's for some higher purpose, when it's for something great. If you give up your life, or even minor pleasures, it's not valuable if you're just doing it to do it. Somebody gives up his life to stand up for his belief in Yiddishkeit and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what do we call such a person? A kadosh. Somebody gives up his life for no reason, what do we call such a person? Suicide. Ma'avir atzmo l'das. And what do we do with such a person? He doesn't even merit the dignity of normal avelus for himself. Somebody who gives up his material wealth for others, for other people, is a bal tzedaka, bal chesed. Someone who throws away his material wealth is in violation of bal tashlis. It's just being wasteful. Right? Meaning it always has to be for a higher purpose. When the Torah describes Vayihi b'yom kolos Moshe l'hakim es ha-mishkan, Moshe Rabbeinu finished erecting the Mishkan. Rashi wonders, why does Moshe get all the credit for the Mishkan? After all, Bitzalel v'aliyah v'kol chacham lev asu es ha-mishkan. It wasn't Moshe that made the Mishkan, yet he gets all the credit. So Rashi explains, Lefi shemasar nafsho alav. Because he was moser nefesh for it. He didn't just do it. He gave of himself in an extraordinary way to make sure it gets done. And amazingly, Rashi points out that the Mishkan is not the only residence of Hashem in history where the credit is given not to the primary builder, but to somebody else. Sukkas David, the Beis HaMikdash was built, and it's referred to in Sefer Melachim as the house of David. David never even saw it. He never lived long enough to see the Beis HaMikdash. Why? Shemoser nafsho al binyan Beis HaMikdash. His whole life, he laid the groundwork to be moser nefesh for the binyan Beis HaMikdash. We are kone things through Mesiras Nefesh. When that Mesiras Nefesh has a purpose. If it doesn't have a purpose, then it's useless and destructive. It's not even about the accomplishment. It's about the work that we put in to pursue the goal. Meaning, David never accomplished the Mikdash. And yet, it's his Mikdash, because he put in the work to achieve that goal. It reminded the beautiful story, I'm sure you've all heard, of Rav Steinman Zichrono Livracha, that one time a class of young children were brought to Rav Steinman, and he asked each child a question, and Rav Aaron Leib was known to be very, very sensitive to every child, even those who are not so talented. You can find videos of him online yelling at leaders of Mostos who want to throw out children because they don't fit their model of what they would wish all the children be. Rosh Simon was a very, very sensitive soul, and he particularly when it came to children. Mr. Van Leid said to he asked each child a question, and he gave each one a candy when they answered correctly. And he asked one boy a question, and the boy didn't know the answer. So he asked him an easier question, and the boy didn't know the answer. So he asked him an even easier question, and the boy didn't know the answer. And in the end, Rosh Hashanah gave candies to everyone. He gave that boy three candies. And he said, because in Yiddishkeit, we reward the effort, and you tried three times. Everyone else only tried once. Anu amelim v'heim amelim. Right, the famous word from the Chafetz Chaim. What do you mean they also get schar for their amelus? No, they don't. They get schar for their accomplishment. We get schar for our amelus. When we're moser nefesh, that itself is the source of schar. In our generation, and I shouldn't say my generation, but certainly those younger than me, the millennial generation, we'll call it, it's already known that one of the bigger challenges for the millennial generation is that the generation, let's put it this way, is not known for extraordinary Mesiras Nefesh. There was a story in the news recently, not so recently, about a year ago, about a 30-year-old guy who was finally thrown out of the house by his parents after he refused to find a job. He just thought his parents should keep on supporting him. They put him through college. He just thought, like, their job to support me, and they sued him to throw him, or he sued them because they threw him out, and they said, you know, they gave him an eviction notice. You have to leave our basement. So, you know, the idea was to highlight the level of entitlement that generation feels. If the Nisayon of the 60s was pritzus, and of the 80s was materialism, the Nisayon of the millennials is Mesiras Nefesh, to give of oneself for a greater purpose, and not just expect things, not to feel a sense of entitlement. You know, there was a rabbinic conference, I think I mentioned this to you, in Atlanta last month, where Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg gave a session on how to engage millennials, meaning how to get them to do something for a community, which I would have loved to hear it. I mentioned this in shul, and I said I wasn't invited to the conference. And then a guy came over to me after davening and said, "My brother ran the conference. He did invite you. You ignored his text." So I was like, "Whoops." So I was invited to the conference, but I didn't go, apparently. So, but I would have loved. Now I lesson learned. I should go, but I would have missed shir if he did. I probably couldn't have gone. But. Maybe when I'm running some sort of program, I'll be able to skip out for a couple of days. But he had said that, I don't know what he said, but the very idea that it requires its own session, that you need a session for such a thing, to how to engage, meaning it suggests that it's a problem. So let's go back. A nazir is mostly nefesh, but that in and of itself might not be so valuable. In fact, it might be something that's worthy of criticism. It might be harmful. If he's interested in becoming a monk, you know, somebody completely removed from society, totally inward focused, there's no positive value in his nazirus. The greatest nazirim in Jewish history, Shmuel, Shimshon, they were men of the people. They were moser nefesh for the people. Shimshon, quite literally, moser nefesh to take down the enemies of the Jewish people. Tamus nafshi implishtim, dying al kiddush Hashem. Shmuel spent his entire life schlepping around from place to place for the benefit of the Jewish people. Going to them, not making them come to him. Nazirus, when it's done right, is the response to self-centeredness. Just like the Gemara Nazir Dav Zayin tells us, and the Dharm Dav Zayin, right? The Gemara tells us of the Nazir who saw that he was taking too much pride in his own good looks. So, Agalecha Chal HaShemayim, he says, I'm going to accept upon myself a nazirus, so I'll shave all my hair off my head to Shemayim. It's a response to a woman who gives in to her own desires and abandoning the person that she should be most dedicated to. Kolaroa sota biklukula yaziratzmo minayayim. Nazirus is the answer to self-centeredness. It's not a person who just wants to live on a mountaintop somewhere and be all about himself and not worry about others. The sin of Nazirus is the extent of removal from the world that the Nazir necessarily has to experience. And that's what Chazal are uneasy about. Our holiest people, the holiest people designated by the Torah as holy, Kohanim, do not live the life of a hermit, celibate, ascetic lives. Their Kedusha becomes evident. How? By being Shluchim of the Tzibur, by representing Klal Yisrael in the Beis HaMikdash, if you assume Shluchei Didan at least. Their Kedusha is expressed in becoming the vehicle through which HaKadosh Baruch Hu's bracha passes to the people. And in that context, maybe we can understand Vichuneka. Vichuneka doesn't mean you should be charismatic. I don't think Chayin is properly translated as charisma. There's no inherent value to charisma. And Adarabah could be very damaging sometimes. It is a tool that, you know, people can have in their toolbox to do great avodas Hashem, but it could be damaging just as easily as it could be helpful. When I was a kid, you know, my daughter translated, second time calling my daughter, Mondrasha, my daughter said, her name is Chani, so she said, chayin means. I said, what does it mean? She said, I love my name because it means chana, means something very special. I said, yeah, what does it mean? She said, chayin means inner beauty. Okay, so it's a little different than charisma. I don't know if that's right either. I don't know if there's a good English translation, but here's how I always understood chayin. When I was a kid in school, right, in yeshiva, they would always translate that matzah chayin beinah, found
graciousness.
Okay, favor. I always said favor. Found favor in his eyes. I never understood what that means. What does it mean, found favor? I don't know. I just typed it and said it the way they told me to say it, because that's how little kids learn, right? You repeat. But what does it mean? The way I always understood it is that you definitely have people like this in your lives, where there are people that you're not particularly well acquainted with. You're not like super close friends with. But like when you see them, you're like, if I saw that guy more often, I'd be really good friends with him. Like, I just like that person. You know, not a person who's like so intimidating because of his brilliance or whatever or anything like that. Just like someone you admire, and it's just Mu'urvim Abrios, and you just feel like, yeah, I just like that guy. That's, you know, I mean, I could list off people in my life that I remember that like we were always... You know, everyone just always loved them. When I was in high school, just to give you an example, some of you probably know, Rabbi Andy Yudin. You know Rabbi Andy Yudin? When he was in high school, and still, Ad Hayom, obviously, he was the Baal Chaim, you know? Everyone loved him. Yeah, he was the smartest kid in the class, and he was the best basketball player and all that, but it never felt that way. Like, it never felt that he was, you know, he never acted that way. It just everyone loved him. Just everyone, you know, and even the people who weren't particularly close to him, you know, that kind of person. That's chayin. Chayin means, you know, like that camp friend that you're not really so in touch with, but you just like that person. It means we become more beloved, more respected. Not the kind of people who arouse jealousy and insecurity in others, but the kind of people that others know that they can trust and will be moser nefesh to help at any moment. And that, indeed, is a very, very great bracha. That's essentially what Chana prayed for. When she prayed for a child, she wanted a child who was just going to be a regular guy that everyone would really like. Nothing unique. Nothing outstanding that would arouse jealousy in others. And what is the most amazing thing at the end of Chana's tefillah after Shmuel is born, when she has to present him to Eli, she says, "Elanar azes balalti. I got exactly what I prayed for." What? He's not outstanding. He's Shmuel. What do you mean he's not outstanding? No, but. He has chayin, and that's what I prayed for. So vichuneka is a very important thing. We have to learn this lesson of a nazir. The reason nazirus is so dangerous is setting yourself apart is a very dangerous thing, and one has to be careful that when one does something like that, when one accepts extra kedusha, that it should be with a healthy dose of chayin that keeps a person completely mu'urav im abriyas.